Most of us have a complicated relationship with anger, because the moment it shows up, two things happen at once inside us. We feel the heat of the emotion, and then we feel a second wave that's often even heavier. Guilt. As if being angry automatically makes us a bad person. As if the emotion itself is a moral failure, and that belief quietly ruins our lives, because when we judge the emotion, we stop listening to the message, we stop protecting the boundary, and we start either swallowing the anger until it turns into silent resentment, or exploding in a way that proves our worst fear. See, this is why anger is dangerous. But what if anger isn't a character flaw at all? What if anger is simply a signal, like pain in the body, telling us something important just got crossed? A value, a limit, a need, a line we didn't defend in time. In that sense, anger isn't the enemy. The enemy is what we do when we don't know how to handle it. The enemy is the confusion. Am I allowed to feel this? Am I overreacting? Should I stay quiet to keep the peace? Or should I say something and risk being seen as the problem? In this episode, we're going to treat anger the way a serious person treats any powerful human ability, as a skill. Not something we suppress, not something we unleash, but something we train. Because the goal isn't to become never angry. The goal is to become the kind of person who can feel anger without losing dignity, without losing control, and without turning your self-respect into collateral damage. The goal is to speak with clarity instead of volume, to set boundaries without long defensive speeches, and to stop confusing "I have a right to be upset" with "I have a right to attack." So if you've been carrying guilt every time you feel angry, or you've been avoiding confrontation until you reach a breaking point, stay with me, because the way out isn't denial. It's precision. It's learning how to notice anger early, separate feeling from behavior, and use it as a compass that points you back to your values, not a fire that burns down your relationships. 1. Admit the anger the moment it appears. We can feel this one in real time if we're honest. Anger rarely starts as a scream. It starts as a small internal no. A tightness in the jaw, a short breath, a subtle heat in the chest. And the biggest mistake we make is that we immediately try to erase it. We tell ourselves, "I'm fine." We force a smile. We act normal. We rush past the feeling like it's something embarrassing that might be seen. But the body doesn't get fooled. The mind doesn't get fooled. All that happens is the anger goes underground. And underground anger doesn't disappear. It ferments. This is where guilt sneaks in. Because we're not just feeling anger. We're also judging ourselves for feeling it. We're trying to be the good version of us, the agreeable version, the calm version, and we think anger threatens that identity, so we pretend it's not there. And ironically, that pretense is what makes anger more dangerous. Not because anger is evil, but because unacknowledged anger doesn't have a clean exit. It leaks into sarcasm, coldness, passive-aggressive comments, silent distance, overthinking, and then one day, an explosion that surprises everyone except the part of us that has been screaming quietly for weeks. The Stoics had a brutal clarity about this. They didn't say, "never feel," they said, "see clearly." And anger, when we name it early, becomes clear. It becomes a signal we can work with instead of a storm we get swallowed by. There's a psychological truth here that's almost too simple. When we label an emotion, when we say internally, "I'm angry," we give the rational part of the brain a chance to come online. We stop being possessed by the feeling and start relating to it. We create a little space, and that space is everything, because inside it, we can choose. So the practice is small, but it's powerful. The moment we notice the first sign, tight shoulders, racing thoughts, that urge to correct someone sharply, we pause and we name it, not as a confession, not as a dramatic statement, just a quiet internal acknowledgement. I'm angry. Sometimes even more precise. I'm angry because I felt disrespected, or I'm angry because I feel ignored, or I'm angry because I'm scared. That last one matters, because anger often rides on top of something softer. But we can't reach the deeper layer if we refuse to admit the top layer exists. And here's the key. Admitting anger isn't the same as acting on it. It's not permission to lash out. It's permission to become honest. It's the moment we stop gaslighting ourselves. Because if we can't be honest with our own emotions, we'll never be honest with our boundaries. We'll keep saying yes while feeling no, and then we'll punish people later for not reading our mind. That's not maturity. That's a trap. So we start simple. When anger appears, we don't argue with it. We don't moralize it. We don't shove it down. We notice it early, name it clearly, and let that naming become the first act of self-respect. And then we ask one calm question before the day continues. What boundary just got touched here? Because anger is often the mind's way of saying, pay attention, something matters. And if we can do just this one thing consistently, catch it early, name it without shame, we'll notice something almost immediately. The anger becomes less explosive because it no longer needs to fight for visibility. It's been heard. It's been acknowledged. And when a feeling is heard, it usually stops screaming. 2. Separate the feeling from the action. This is where anger becomes safe. Not because the feeling gets smaller, but because we stop confusing emotion with permission. We can be furious and still be honorable. We can feel that heat rise and still choose a response that protects our dignity. That distinction sounds obvious, but in real life, it's one of the hardest skills we ever learn, because anger has momentum. It wants movement. It wants release. It wants to do something. Say something sharp, send the text, slam the door, set the record straight. And in that moment, the emotion starts whispering a lie that feels true. If I don't act right now, I'm weak. But that's not strength. That's reflex. The Stoics were clear on this. Our first impression, the first surge, is not fully under our control. But the second step is, the moment after the surge is where character lives. And what we're training here is the ability to hold that moment long enough to choose. Because anger, as a feeling, is neutral. It's information. It's energy. The harm comes from what we attach to it, our stories, our assumptions, and then our behavior. So we start telling ourselves something simple, almost like a mantra. I'm allowed to feel this, and I'm responsible for what I do with it. That sentence alone can change a life, because it removes shame without removing accountability. It says, the emotion doesn't make us bad, but the emotion also doesn't get to drive. A practical way to feel this is to imagine anger like electricity. Electricity can light a city or burn down a house. The same energy, different wiring. The goal isn't to eliminate electricity. The goal is to wire it into something useful. And useful in anger usually means one of two things. Either we use it to clarify a boundary, or we use it to protect a value. Not to punish, not to humiliate, not to dominate. Because domination is what anger does when it's scared, but clarity is what anger can become when it's trained. Here's the trap we fall into. We think controlling ourselves means suppressing ourselves. So we either explode because we refuse to suppress, or we suppress because we fear exploding. Stoicism offers a third path, self-governance. We can feel fully and still act wisely. That's not repression. That's leadership, inner leadership. So in the moment when anger shows up, we practice a quick internal split screen. On one side, here's what I feel. On the other side, here's what I'm about to do. And we question the second side. Is this action aligned with who I want to be? If I do this, will I be proud of myself tomorrow? Is this solving the problem or feeding my ego? Sometimes the best move is silence, for now. Not avoidance, not swallowing it, just timing. Because anger is usually loudest in the first few minutes, and our worst decisions are often made in that early peak. So we buy time. We take a breath. We take a walk. We drink water. We let the nervous system cool down just enough for the mind to come back online. And then, when we speak from clarity instead of chaos. If we're being honest, a lot of our guilt around anger isn't guilt about feeling angry. It's guilt about what we did while angry. The harsh tone, the insult, the exaggeration, the threat, the way we made someone feel unsafe. So this skill, separating feeling from action, is how we keep anger without collecting regret. And here's a powerful reframing. The calmer we can stay while angry, the more serious we become. People don't fear the person who yells, they just brace for them, but they respect the person who can say steadily, "That didn't work for me. Don't do it again." That's not weakness, that's strength with a spine. So we let anger exist. We don't apologize for the feeling, we just don't outsource our behavior to it. We make the emotion a messenger, not a master. 3. Stop the guilt that's attached to anger. A lot of us don't actually fear anger. We fear what anger says about us. We fear that if we feel angry, it means we're ungrateful, selfish, dramatic, too sensitive, or not spiritually evolved enough. And that fear is exactly what turns anger into a problem. Because when guilt enters the room, we stop dealing with the situation that triggered the anger, and we start fighting ourselves. We start negotiating with our own nervous system like it's a criminal. We don't ask, "What boundary got crossed?" We ask, "What's wrong with me for feeling this?" That question is poison. Anger is often the mind's way of protecting something valuable: respect, fairness, honesty, safety, time, dignity. So when we automatically feel guilty for being angry, we're basically telling ourselves, "Your boundaries don't matter." And if we do that long enough, we become the kind of person who can be disrespected repeatedly and still smile. From the outside, it looks like patience. On the inside, it slowly becomes self-abandonment. Stoicism doesn't ask us to abandon ourselves. It asks us to be precise, to be just, to be disciplined. And guilt, when it's misplaced, destroys precision. It makes us either apologize for having needs or explode later because we never gave those needs a clean voice. So the first move is to separate two things that most of us mix together: healthy anger versus harmful behavior. If we acted with cruelty, insulted someone, threatened them, or attacked their humanity, then yes, there may be real remorse to process. That's not guilt for anger. That's accountability for behavior. But if we simply felt anger because someone crossed a line, interrupted us, used us, dismissed us, lied to us, or took our kindness for granted, then guilt is not wisdom. It's conditioning. A simple question breaks the spell. Did I actually do something wrong, or did I simply finally notice something wrong? That question is a flashlight, because a lot of guilt around anger is actually guilt around boundaries. We feel guilty not because we hurt someone, but because we stopped letting them hurt us comfortably. And this is where it gets deeper. Many of us were trained early to believe that being good means being easy to deal with, quiet, agreeable, low maintenance. So when anger rises, it threatens that identity. It says, I'm not okay with this. And the old programming panics. If I'm not okay with this, will I lose love? Will I be rejected? Will I be seen as difficult? So guilt appears as a control mechanism. It's the inner voice trying to keep you safe by keeping you small. But safety and self-respect are not the same thing. The Stoic would say, you don't owe anyone your silence at the cost of your dignity. You don't owe anyone a version of yourself that is easy to exploit. And you definitely don't owe anyone the right to cross your boundaries without consequence. Anger, in its healthiest form, is the emotional immune system. It tells you something is invading your integrity. So instead of, I feel guilty for being angry, we train a new sentence. I'm allowed to feel angry, and I'm going to handle it with honor. That's the upgrade. It removes the shame, but keeps the responsibility. It makes you strong without making you aggressive. And then we ask another important question. What is the anger trying to protect? Because when we name the deeper value, the guilt starts to fade. If the anger is protecting your time, your body, your peace, your reputation, your principles, then the emotion isn't immoral. It's meaningful. And if the anger is protecting your ego, your pride, your need to win, then the emotion still isn't a sin, but it becomes a signal to slow down, humble yourself, and choose a better response. This is the Stoic move. Don't judge the feeling. Investigate it. Use it as data, because guilt tries to shut the conversation down. Investigation opens it up. So if we want to stop feeling guilty for anger, we stop treating anger like a moral verdict. We treat it like a messenger. We listen. We extract the message. We set the boundary. We choose the response. And then we move forward clean. And the strange thing is, when we stop feeling guilty for anger, we actually become calmer, because the anger no longer needs to scream to be heard. It becomes a clear signal, not a forbidden emotion. And that's when anger stops controlling our life and starts protecting it. 4. Don't wait for the explosion. If we're honest, the explosion is rarely about one thing. It's about 10 things. It's about the small moments we ignored, the tiny, that didn't feel right, signals we dismissed, the quiet discomfort we swallowed because we wanted to be nice, to be easy, to be above it. And then one day, something minor happens. Someone interrupts us, forgets something, says a careless line, and we erupt in a way that feels out of proportion. Everyone thinks we overreacted. We might even think we overreacted. But the truth is, we didn't react to the last moment. We reacted to the pile. This is one of the most practical ideas in anger training. Anger becomes dangerous when it becomes stored, when it's delayed, when it turns into a hidden savings account of resentment that keeps collecting interest. And the longer we wait, the less precise we become. The issue stops being the issue, and suddenly we're arguing about character, motives, and you always, and you never. That's not communication. That's accumulated pain, looking for an exit. The Stoic mind doesn't postpone reality. It doesn't pretend the line wasn't crossed. It addresses it, while it's still small enough to address cleanly. That doesn't mean constant confrontation. It means early clarity. It means we respond at the first honest signal of disrespect, not at the tenth. Here's the subtle problem with waiting. The longer we stay silent, the more we train other people how to treat us. People aren't mind readers. If we keep saying, it's fine when it isn't, we're teaching them that our boundaries are optional. And then we get angry at them for following the rules we quietly wrote. So the goal is not to be harsh. The goal is to be clear, early. Think of anger like a smoke alarm. A smoke alarm isn't meant to go off once the house is fully on fire. It's meant to go off at the first hint of smoke, so you can respond while the situation is still manageable. When we ignore anger, we're basically ripping the batteries out of the alarm because we don't like the sound. And then we're shocked when the fire spreads. So this practice is about timing. When you feel the early signal, the tightening, the irritation, the wait, what? You don't treat it like a nuisance. You treat it like information. You take a breath. You choose a calm moment. And you address it while it's still specific. When you said that, I felt dismissed. When you cancelled last minute, it threw off my whole day. When you joke about that, it doesn't land well with me. Simple, direct, clean. Notice how different that is from the explosion version. The explosion says, "You never respect me. You're selfish. You don't care." That's not just louder. It's less accurate. And the less accurate we are, the more guilt we feel afterward, because we know we said things we didn't mean, or said them in a way that wasn't fair. That's why early confrontation is actually kinder. It's kinder to you, because you don't carry the weight. And it's kinder to the other person, because they get a clear signal before the relationship becomes a battlefield. There's also a biological piece here. When anger is fresh and small, our nervous system is still within a manageable range. We can regulate, we can think. But when we wait and wait, our nervous system gets trained into chronic activation, low-grade irritation, tension, mental rehearsal, imagining arguments in the shower, rereading messages, building a case. By the time we finally speak, we're not speaking from the present moment. We're speaking from weeks of internal debate, and that's why it comes out like a flood. So the Stoic approach is simple. Handle it at the first honest signal, not with aggression, with clarity, not to win, to protect the relationship, or to protect your boundary, or to protect your own peace. This doesn't mean you confront everything. Some things truly aren't worth it. But if something matters enough to keep returning, it matters enough to address. Because unspoken anger doesn't vanish. It transforms into distance, coldness, avoidance, and eventually a blow-up that damages trust. So if we want to get angry without guilt, we have to stop treating anger like a forbidden emotion that we store in secret until it becomes uncontrollable. We learn to deal with it early, while it's still clean, while it's still specific, while it can still lead to understanding instead of destruction. And when we do that consistently, something changes. We stop living on the edge of a volcano. We become calmer because we're no longer carrying unfinished conversations inside our body. 5. Use I language instead of you language. Anger makes the mind move fast. And when the mind moves fast, it reaches for shortcuts. One of the fastest shortcuts is accusation. You're disrespectful. You're selfish. You don't care. Those lines feel satisfying in the moment because they release pressure, but they almost always create a second problem. Defensiveness. The other person stops hearing what happened and starts protecting their identity. Now it's not a conversation. It's a courtroom. And the moment you turn it into a courtroom, you lose the one thing you actually need, resolution. This is why I language is not a polite trick. It's a precision tool. It keeps the conversation grounded in reality instead of turning it into an attack on character. It forces us to describe what we experience, not what we assume. And that single shift changes everything. Because most conflict isn't about facts, it's about meaning. We're not just angry at what someone did. We're angry at what we think it means about how they see us. So, I language is how we separate the event from the story. It sounds like, I felt disrespected when you interrupted me. I felt ignored when you didn't respond. I felt anxious when the plan changed last minute. Notice what's happening here. We're still naming the problem, but we're not labeling the person as the problem. We're giving them something they can actually work with. A behavior, a moment, a specific action. That creates the possibility of change. When we use you language, we often say the strongest version of our frustration, not the truest version. We exaggerate because anger wants certainty. It wants to simplify the world into good and bad, right and wrong. But relationships are rarely that clean. Even when someone is truly wrong, the best way to get a better outcome is to keep your message sharp and your delivery calm. The Stoics understood this through the lens of control. You can't control how someone reacts, but you can control how clearly you speak. And clarity matters, because what we're usually trying to do in anger is defend a boundary. We're trying to say, that doesn't work for me. But if we say it with accusation, we accidentally shift the goal from boundary setting to punishment. Now the other person feels attacked, and the original boundary gets lost in the emotional smoke. I language keeps you out of that trap. And there's another layer here, one that hits deep. When we speak in you language, we sometimes give away our power, because we're describing the other person as the cause of our internal state. You made me feel so. You ruined my day. The Stoic would challenge that gently. Nobody controls our inner world unless we hand them the keys. That doesn't mean people aren't responsible for their actions. They are. But our job is to speak from self-possession, not emotional dependence. So instead of, you made me angry, we say, I'm feeling angry because this crossed a boundary for me. It sounds subtle, but it's profound. It says, I own my emotions, and I'm also naming the behavior that triggered them. That's maturity. That's power without aggression. Now, does I language mean we become soft? No. It means we become accurate, and accuracy is the most underrated form of strength. You can be firm and still use I language. In fact, I language can hit harder because it's harder to argue with. I felt disrespected when you spoke over me is difficult to dismiss without looking unreasonable. But you're disrespectful is easy to fight because it's a label and labels invite debate. If we're training anger as a skill, we want our anger to land cleanly, not messily, not like a grenade, like a scalpel. Because the goal is not to hurt. The goal is to protect something important. Your time, your dignity, your boundaries, your values. So before we speak in anger, we practice a simple internal rewrite. We take the you sentence and translate it into an I sentence. You never listen to me becomes, I don't feel heard when I'm interrupted. You don't respect me becomes, I feel disrespected when my boundaries are ignored. You always do this becomes, this pattern keeps happening and it's not working for me. That translation does two things. It lowers defensiveness and it forces us to tell the truth in a way that can actually be received. And when your anger can be received, it stops being destructive. It becomes useful. It becomes a tool for change, a boundary with a voice. 6. Say what you want clearly, because anger isn't just protest. It's a request for change. A lot of our anger stays stuck because we treat it like a complaint, not a signal. We express the frustration, we explain the pain, we describe the problem in detail, and then we stop. We never land the plane. We never state the outcome we actually want. And when we don't state what we want, two things happen. We feel unheard. and the other person feels attacked. The conversation becomes a loop where we keep proving we're upset, but nothing changes. So here's the upgrade. Anger becomes clean when it becomes specific. Think of it like this. Protest without a request is just noise. It might be understandable noise, even justified noise, but it still leaves everyone in confusion. The Stoic mind doesn't aim for dramatic expression. It aims for clarity and effectiveness. It doesn't just say, "This is wrong." It says, "Here is what needs to be different." Most of us were never trained to do that. We were trained to either swallow anger to keep the peace or to explode and hope the explosion forces change. But explosions don't teach, they scare. They create compliance for a moment, then resentment later. Clear requests, on the other hand, create structure. They turn emotion into a direction. So when anger shows up, after we name it and regulate it, we ask a practical question. What do I want to be different specifically? Not, "I want you to respect me" as a vague idea, but what respect looks like in behavior. "I want you to stop interrupting me. I want you to let me finish my sentence. I want you to tell me in advance if plans change. I want you to stop using that joke with me. I want you to not speak to me in that tone." Clear, concrete, observable. This is where guilt often dissolves too, because guilt usually grows in chaos. When you can't articulate what you want, you feel stuck. And stuck anger turns into messy anger. Messy anger creates messy outcomes, and messy outcomes create guilt. Clarity breaks that cycle. There's also a hidden courage in making a request. Complaining is easier than requesting, because a request exposes your standards. It reveals where you draw the line. And that can feel vulnerable, especially if we're afraid the other person will say no, laugh, dismiss it, or accuse us of being too much. But this is exactly the moment Stoicism matters. Because Stoicism is about valuing your principles over approval. It's about not shrinking your needs just to keep people comfortable. Now, there's a difference between a request and a demand. A demand is often fueled by control. You must do this or else. A request is grounded in values. This is what I need to continue in a healthy way. The Stoic speaks from that second place. Firm, but not theatrical. Direct, but not cruel. Clear, but not desperate. And if we want a simple format, we can use a three-step sentence that stays calm, but lands strong. When X happens, I feel Y, and I need Z. When plans change last minute, I feel stressed, and I need more notice. When you criticize me in front of others, I feel disrespected, and I need you to bring it to me privately. That's not therapy language, it's precision language. It removes guessing, it removes mind reading. It gives the other person a clear map. A lot of people don't change because they're evil. They don't change because they're unaware. They don't realize the weight of what they're doing, or they've never been given a clear boundary. So your clarity is not just self-protection, it's communication. And it's also a test, because when you state what you need clearly, you see who respects you and who only respects you when you're silent. That's a big one, because anger often appears at the edge of a truth. We've been tolerating something that doesn't work. When you turn anger into a clear request, you turn it into a moment of self-respect. You stop being vague. You stop hoping the other person gets it. You stop performing pain. You speak like an adult who knows what they require to stay well. And here's the Stoic core. We're not responsible for how others react to our clarity. We're responsible for delivering it with integrity. If they respond with care, you learn the relationship can hold honesty. If they respond with mockery, manipulation, or punishment, you learn something even more important. The anger was protecting you from a dynamic that needed to be addressed. So the next time anger rises, don't just vent the heat. Convert it into direction. Ask yourself calmly, what am I asking to change? Then say it, clearly, simply, and without apology for having a standard. 7. Don't over-justify yourself. This is one of the sneakiest ways guilt shows up. We finally decide to speak up, and then we talk like we're on trial. We start building a case. We give a 10-minute explanation. We add unnecessary details. We repeat ourselves. We try to sound reasonable so the other person won't reject our boundary. And what's really happening underneath is fear. Fear of being seen as difficult, fear of losing approval, fear of conflict. So we over-explain to earn permission to have a limit. But boundaries don't need permission. They need clarity. Over-justifying is often a form of self-betrayal disguised as politeness, because the more we explain, the more we communicate uncertainty. We unintentionally signal, I'm not sure I'm allowed to want this, so please understand and accept me. And then, if the other person pushes back, we collapse, or we get pulled into debate, or we start negotiating a boundary that shouldn't be negotiable. Now anger returns because we spoke up, but we didn't stand firm. And afterward, guilt returns too, because we feel we made a big deal and still didn't protect ourselves. The Stoic approach is calmer and cleaner. Say what you mean, say it once, and let your composure carry the weight. Marcus Aurelius had this quiet discipline in his writing. He didn't plead with the world. He reminded himself of what was true and acted accordingly, and that's the spirit here. Your boundary isn't a speech, it's a line. When you draw it clearly, you don't need a long explanation. The line itself is the explanation. A big reason we over-justify is that we confuse kindness with negotiation. We think being kind means being endlessly flexible, endlessly patient, endlessly understanding. But kindness without self-respect becomes surrender. Real kindness includes honesty. It includes the courage to say, this doesn't work for me, without apologizing for existing. So the practice is to shorten the message without losing firmness. Instead of, I'm sorry, I know you didn't mean it, and I don't want you to think I'm angry, but lately I've been stressed, and also last time you did it I didn't say anything, but we try. I'm not okay with that. Don't do it again. Or, please don't speak to me like that. Or, I need a heads up next time. Simple, human, direct. And here's what makes this difficult. The moment you stop over-explaining, you'll feel a wave of internal discomfort. Almost like your body is saying, wait, shouldn't we add more? Shouldn't we soften it? Shouldn't we prove we're a good person? That wave is not evidence you're wrong. It's evidence you're breaking a pattern. You're stepping out of the old role, the one where you had to earn the right to be respected. Over-justifying also gives the other person too many handles to grab. If you give 10 reasons, they can argue with 9 of them and ignore the boundary. They can say, that's not what happened, or you're being dramatic, or you're misremembering, and suddenly you're defending details instead of protecting your standard. But when you state the boundary cleanly, there's less room for distraction. It becomes about behavior and expectation, not a debate about your feelings. Now, does that mean you never explain? No. Sometimes explanation helps when there's goodwill and confusion. But the key is this. Explain from choice, not from fear. Explain because it adds clarity, not because you're trying to secure permission. Your boundary should still stand, even if they don't understand it. That's the Stoic spine. You're not demanding agreement, you're stating reality. So a good internal question is, am I explaining to clarify or explaining to be accepted? If it's to clarify, keep it brief and calm. If it's to be accepted, pause, breathe, return to the line. Because the moment you start begging for acceptance, you lose your footing. There's a quiet confidence in someone who can set a boundary without a lecture. It signals self-respect. It signals maturity. It says, I'm not here to fight, I'm here to be clear. And that clarity reduces guilt. Because guilt often comes from messy conversations where we lose ourselves. When your message is clean, you leave the conversation with peace, even if the other person doesn't like it. So say it once. Say it clearly. Don't apologize for your boundary. Don't build a courtroom argument. You're not on trial. You're simply living like someone who respects their own limits. 8. Don't raise your voice. Raise your clarity. A lot of us grew up believing that volume equals power. If you're really serious, you get louder. If you want to be respected, you intensify. If you want someone to finally listen, you push harder. And in the heat of anger, that belief feels tempting because raising your voice can create instant impact. People go quiet. The room shifts. You feel for a moment like you've taken control. But that control is fragile. It's borrowed from intimidation, not built on authority. And it comes with a cost. Guilt later, and usually a damaged connection, because people may comply, but they stop feeling safe. Stoicism teaches something more mature. Strength is not proven by how loudly we react. It's proven by how clearly we can speak while we're emotionally activated. Real power is the ability to keep your tone steady while your boundary stays firm. It's the ability to say no without turning it into a threat. Clarity is what makes anger useful. When you raise your voice, you often lose precision. Your words speed up. You start exaggerating. You bring in past issues. You shift from, this behavior needs to change, to, you are the problem. And then, even if your original point was valid, it gets buried under the emotional noise. That's why yelling feels like release, but rarely leads to a clean result. It's a storm, not a message. Clarity, on the other hand, is a message. And the funny thing is, when you speak with clarity, you don't need volume. Your calm becomes the weight. Your steadiness becomes the warning. Not a warning of aggression, of seriousness. People can sense it when you're not trying to win with force, but with truth. They hear it in the restraint. They feel it in the composure. It's the difference between a person who is out of control and a person who is in command of themselves. There's a psychological reality here. A loud voice often triggers the other person's nervous system. They stop processing your words and start protecting themselves. They either fight back or shut down. In either case, your message doesn't land. But when your tone stays measured, you keep the door open for the other person's brain to stay online. They can actually hear you, even if they don't like what you're saying. So the skill is not be calm in a fake way. It's be calm enough to be effective. It's a choice to prioritize outcome over release. Here's a practical approach that helps a lot. Slow down on purpose. When we're angry, we speed up. So we do the opposite. We let there be a small pause before we speak. We shorten our sentences. We remove extra words. We make the message clean, and we keep the tone stable. Not because we're trying to be polite, because we're trying to be heard. Instead of, I can't believe you would do that, you always do this, you never think about anyone but yourself, we say, don't do that again, or that crossed a line for me, or I'm not okay with that. The calmer the delivery, the sharper the boundary feels. It's almost counterintuitive, but it works because it signals self-control, and self-control is persuasive. There's also something deeply freeing about this. When you stop using volume as your weapon, you stop fearing your own anger. You don't have to suppress it or pretend it's not there. You can feel it fully and still speak like a grounded person. That's what angry without guilty looks like. It's not a saintly calm, it's disciplined clarity. And if you're thinking, but what if they don't listen unless I get loud? That's a real fear. But here's the stoic answer. If someone only respects you when you become threatening, they don't respect you. They fear you. And fear is not the foundation of a healthy relationship. So your job isn't to become louder. Your job is to become clearer about what happens next if the boundary isn't respected. Not as a threat, but as a consequence. If this continues, I'm leaving the conversation. If this happens again, I won't be able to help with that. If you keep speaking to me like that, we'll have to continue later. Calm, direct, real. That's where clarity becomes strength. Because it shows you're not begging, you're not performing anger, you're simply stating reality. So the next time anger rises, treat your voice like a steering wheel. If you yank it aggressively, you crash. If you hold it steady, you can navigate the sharp turn. Keep your tone controlled. Let your words be few and accurate. Let your calm be the pressure. Let your clarity do the work. 9. Watch your body language, because your body can sabotage your message or make it unstoppable. A lot of people think communication is just words, especially when they're trying to say it right. But in moments of anger, words are only part of the signal. The body speaks first. The eyes, the posture, the hands, the distance you take, the way you breathe. These things often communicate more than the sentence you carefully chose. And if your body is screaming threat while your words are trying to sound calm, the other person will react to the threat, not the words. This is why people sometimes leave a conflict thinking, I said it clearly, why didn't it land? Because it didn't land through the mouth, it landed through the nervous system. Anger changes the body instantly. Shoulders tighten, jaw locks, chest rises, hands clench, the face hardens, you start leaning forward without noticing, you start pointing, rolling your eyes, sighing sharply. You may even smile in a way that's not warmth but contempt, and contempt, more than anger, destroys trust. It tells the other person, I'm above you, even if your words say, I just want us to fix this. So the stoic move is simple, but it takes practice. When anger rises, we regulate the body before we refine the speech, because the body sets the tone. And the tone decides whether the conversation becomes a fight or a turning point. There's a reason soldiers train breathing. There's a reason athletes train form. When pressure hits, you don't rise to your ideals. You fall to your training. So we train here too. We train our physical presence to match our intention. Start with the easiest lever, breathing. Anger makes the breath short and sharp. So you slow it down, not dramatically, just enough to lower the internal intensity. A longer exhale signals safety to your nervous system. It tells your body, we're not in a life or death moment, and that alone can keep you from saying something you'll regret. Then, posture. If you're leaning forward like you're about to attack, pull back slightly. Sit down if you can. Ground your feet. Drop your shoulders. Unclench your hands. These small physical shifts send a powerful message. I'm serious. but I'm not out of control. And that's exactly the presence that makes anger effective instead of destructive. Eye contact matters too. Angry people often do one of two things. They stare intensely in a way that feels like a threat, or they avoid eye contact in a way that feels like resentment. The middle path is calm eye contact, steady, not aggressive. It says, I'm here. I mean what I'm saying. I'm not performing. I'm not scared. Even the volume of your movements matters. Slamming things, throwing your hands up, walking away dramatically. Those actions turn the conversation into theater, and theater creates guilt later because you know you weren't just communicating, you were releasing pressure. Again, we're not judging ourselves, we're training. The goal is to keep your body aligned with your highest self. In the moment, your lower self wants control. Here's a practical question to ask mid-conversation, quietly in your head. If someone filmed my posture right now with no audio, what would it look like I'm trying to do, solve, or dominate? That question is sobering, because sometimes we think we're just being honest, but our body is acting like a weapon. And if our body is acting like a weapon, the other person will defend themselves, and the message is lost. Now, one important nuance. Calm body language doesn't mean softness. It doesn't mean you're not serious. It means you're precise. In fact, calm body language can feel more powerful than anger theatrics because it communicates self-control. And self-control is a form of authority that most people recognize instantly. It's the difference between someone who is losing control and someone who is deciding. And when your body is calm, your words land differently. Don't speak to me like that becomes a boundary, not a fight. That's not okay with me becomes a line, not a provocation. We'll talk when we're calmer becomes a decision, not an escape. So if we want anger without guilt, we must stop treating anger as something that only happens in the mind. Anger is a full body event, and the body can either amplify it into chaos or contain it into strength. Calm your breath, relax your jaw, lower your shoulders, keep your gestures minimal, hold your ground without leaning into threat. Let your body say the same thing your words are saying. I'm upset and I'm in control. That combination is rare, and it's exactly what makes anger clean. 10. Don't use the past as a weapon. When we're angry, the mind becomes a collector. It starts pulling files from the archive at lightning speed. Not just the current situation, but everything that ever felt similar. Every old disappointment. Every time we let something slide. Every moment we stayed silent. And suddenly we're not talking about what happened today. We're talking about a lifetime of emotional receipts. That's when anger stops being a boundary and becomes a battlefield. This is one of the most common reasons people feel guilty after they get angry. Because they didn't just address the present. They attacked the person's entire history. They used the past like a hammer. You always do this. You never change. Remember when you did that? And even if some of those memories are true, the moment we bring them in like ammunition, the conversation turns into defense. The other person isn't thinking about the current behavior anymore. They're preparing a counterattack, or they're shutting down, or they're trying to escape the shame of being judged for their whole existence. And nothing gets solved. The Stoic approach is not pretend the past didn't happen. It's choose the most effective battlefield, and the present moment is the most effective one. Because the present is where behavior can change. The past is where people argue. The present is where you set a boundary. The past is where you punish. So the skill is to discipline your focus. Keep the conversation on the current incident. Not because the past isn't real, but because bringing it up in anger usually isn't about clarity, it's about power. It's the mind's way of saying, I've suffered and I want you to pay. That desire is human, but it's also dangerous because it almost guarantees that your anger will create more distance instead of more respect. Here's a simple way to tell whether you're using the past as a weapon. The moment you say always or never, you've probably left the present. Those words are rarely accurate, and even when they're emotionally true, they're strategically weak. They trigger defensiveness immediately. They make the other person feel like there's no way to win, no path to redemption, so they stop trying to understand you and start trying to protect themselves. And once that shift happens, you've lost the point of the conversation. What you want is change. You want respect. You want a boundary to be honored. You want your experience to be taken seriously. The past as weapon approach might feel satisfying for a second, but it doesn't produce those outcomes. It produces chaos and guilt. It makes your anger look like an attack rather than a signal. So we practice something more disciplined. We name what happened now. We name how it affected us, and we state what needs to change. Clean, specific, present-focused. For example, instead of, you've been doing this for years, you never care about my time, you say, today, when you were late without telling me, it didn't work for me. Next time, I need a message. That's not weak. That's strong, because it's actionable. It's hard to twist. It holds the person accountable without humiliating them. Now you might be thinking, but the past matters. This is a pattern. Yes, patterns matter. But there's a mature way to address a pattern without turning it into a courtroom. You can say calmly, this has happened more than once, and it's becoming a problem for me. Notice the tone. It points to a pattern without throwing old events like knives. It keeps the focus on change, not punishment. And here's why this matters emotionally. When you stay present, you stay cleaner inside. You walk away with less guilt because you didn't become cruel. You didn't drag the other person through old shame. You didn't turn one issue into a character assassination. You stayed on the truth of the moment. Stoicism is fundamentally about discipline, especially mental discipline. And mental discipline means we don't let anger hijack our attention. We don't let it turn us into someone who fights dirty just to feel powerful for a minute. We choose a higher standard: fairness, precision, self-control. So the practice is simple, but not easy. Before you speak, ask yourself, am I trying to solve this, or am I trying to hurt them back? If it's the second, pause, breathe, return to the present, name the current behavior, ask for a specific change, keep your dignity intact, because the present is where respect is built. And when you stop weaponizing the past, your anger becomes something rare, a clean boundary, delivered with strength, without cruelty. 11. Don't delay the right confrontation. There's a quiet kind of anger that doesn't explode. It just hardens. It becomes background noise in the mind, a low-grade irritation that follows you through the day like a shadow. And the longer it stays unresolved, the more it changes shape. It stops feeling like anger and starts feeling like contempt, fatigue, emotional distance, a subtle dislike you can't explain. This is what chronic delay does, not because we're weak, but because we keep postponing the one thing that would have kept everything clean, the right confrontation at the right time. Most of us delay because we confuse confrontation with conflict. We imagine raised voices, drama, damaged relationships. We fear being misunderstood. We fear losing the person. We fear being labeled as too much. So we wait. We tell ourselves we're being patient, mature, forgiving. But deep down, we know the truth. We're not choosing peace. We're choosing avoidance. And avoidance has a price. It always collects interest. Stoicism is about facing reality as it is, not as we wish it to be. And the reality is this. When something matters enough to make you angry repeatedly, it matters enough to be addressed. If you don't confront it, you're not being kind. You're letting the situation train you into resentment. You're letting the anger sink into your identity until you become someone who's constantly tense around a person you once enjoyed. That's not emotional maturity. That's emotional erosion. The right confrontation is not an attack. It's not a showdown. It's a clarification. It's the moment you stop allowing confusion to live in your relationship. You bring the issue into the light, calmly, clearly, and you give it a chance to change. When you delay, you don't prevent pain. You multiply it, because now you're dealing with the original issue, plus the months of silent suffering. And here's the part people rarely admit. Delay isn't neutral. It sends a message. When you keep letting something slide, you're communicating that it's acceptable. You're not just tolerating it, you're normalizing it. And the other person may not even realize what they're doing, because you've trained them that there's no consequence, no boundary, no honest feedback. Then, later, when you finally speak, they're shocked, and you're furious that they're shocked. That's how delayed confrontation turns into chaos. The Stoic approach is cleaner. Confront early, confront calmly, confront with purpose. Not the moment you're most heated, not in a rushed hallway, not as a sarcastic joke, but when you can speak with dignity. The goal is not to discharge emotion. The goal is to protect the relationship, or if the relationship can't be protected, to protect yourself. Either way, the delay is what keeps you trapped. A useful mental frame is to see confrontation like maintenance. If you maintain a machine, you don't wait until it catches fire. You listen for the small noises. You check the parts. You address it while it's still repairable. Relationships are the same. Small truths spoken early prevent big resentments later. So how do we do this practically? We choose the moment with intention. We keep it short. We keep it present focused. We state the behavior, the impact, and the request. And then we stop talking. We don't lecture. We don't overprove. We don't threaten. We simply make the reality clear. For example, I want to bring something up before it turns into resentment. When you cancel last minute, it throws me off, and I need more notice. That sentence is calm, but it's strong. It doesn't accuse the person of being evil. It tells them this matters, and it gives them a chance to adjust. Now, sometimes we delay because we're not sure we have the right to confront. Maybe we're worried we're being unfair. That's a real concern. And the Stoic answer is not to silence yourself. It's to test your own clarity first. Ask, is this a preference or a boundary? If it's just a preference, you can be flexible. If it's a boundary tied to respect, safety, honesty, or dignity, then delaying it is a form of self-neglect. And one more truth. The right confrontation often feels uncomfortable before it feels freeing. You might feel your heart race. You might feel your throat tighten. You might want to back out. But that discomfort is the price of integrity. The alternative is paying that price later with resentment and emotional distance. So don't delay the right confrontation. Don't let anger become a long-term tenant in your body. Bring it into the light early, while you still have clarity, while you still have goodwill, while the issue is still specific. That's how you protect peace without sacrificing self-respect. 12. Understand that some anger is covering something deeper. Sometimes we think we're angry, but if we look closely, we realize anger is just the top layer, a protective layer, It's the armor that shows up when something softer underneath feels exposed. Hurt, fear, shame, loneliness, disappointment. And if we only work with the anger, we might miss the real message completely. We might try to manage anger while the real wound keeps bleeding quietly underneath. This matters because guilt often attaches itself to anger when the anger feels confusing. When we're snapping at people we love over small things. When we're irritated all day for no clear reason. When we feel too angry for what happened. In those moments, anger is often not the truth. It's the cover. The Stoics were incredibly serious about this kind of inner inspection. They believed that our emotions are not random. They come from judgments, interpretations, and deeper needs. So the Stoic practice isn't just calm down. It's look deeper. What is actually happening inside us right now? A good way to approach this is to treat anger like a guard dog. The dog barks loudly, but it's barking because it senses something. The bark isn't the whole story. The bark is the alert. And if we punish the bark without checking what triggered it, we miss the point. Anger is often the bark. The deeper feeling is what it's guarding. For example, we get angry when someone forgets something important. But underneath, we might be hurt because it makes us feel invisible. We get angry when someone criticizes us, but underneath, we might feel shame because it touches an insecurity we already carry. We get angry when plans change, but underneath, we might feel fear because uncertainty makes us feel unsafe. We get angry when someone doesn't respond quickly, but underneath, we might feel anxious attachment, the old fear of being abandoned. When we don't see the deeper layer, our anger becomes blunt, it becomes loud, it becomes repetitive, because it's trying to protect a wound we haven't acknowledged. And this is why anger can feel out of control. It's not just anger, it's anger plus buried pain. So the skill here is to pause and ask a question that changes the whole conversation inside us. If anger is the surface, what's underneath? We don't ask this to invalidate the anger. We ask it to understand it. Because once we understand the deeper feeling, our response becomes wiser and cleaner, and guilt starts to fade. Let's make it practical. Next time you feel anger rising, ask yourself, am I angry or am I hurt? Am I angry or am I scared? Am I angry or do I feel disrespected in a way that touches an old wound? That last one matters. Sometimes the present situation is small, but it activates a much older memory in the nervous system. The mind isn't just reacting to today, it's reacting to a pattern, a history, a feeling it knows too well. And here's the important part. When you identify the deeper feeling, you can speak differently. If you only speak from anger, you'll sound like accusation. But if you speak from the deeper truth, you'll sound like clarity. I felt dismissed when you laughed at that. That comment landed as disrespect for me. When you disappear without explaining, it creates anxiety in me. This is not weakness. This is emotional intelligence. It's strength, because it takes courage to speak from the softer layer. Now, does that mean we always reveal our deepest feelings to everyone? No. Stoicism isn't about oversharing. It's about wisdom, knowing what to reveal, to whom, and for what purpose. The key is that we first tell the truth to ourselves. We don't let anger become the only language we have. Because when anger becomes the only language, every message sounds like a fight. When we understand the deeper layer, we can handle anger with honor. We can set boundaries without cruelty. We can be firm without being reactive. We can protect ourselves without turning every moment into war. So yes, sometimes you're angry, And you have every right to be, but sometimes you're not just angry. You're wounded, and that wound deserves attention, not punishment. If we can learn to notice what anger is protecting, we stop feeling guilty for having the emotion, and we start using it as a doorway into something more honest, more healing, more powerful. 13. Learn to say no without excessive apology. This is one of the cleanest forms of anger prevention we can learn, because so much of the anger we carry comes from a single pattern. We say yes when we mean no, and then we resent the person for taking what we offered. We overextend, we sacrifice, we tolerate, we agree, we show up, and inside, something tightens. Not because the other person is evil, but because we abandoned ourselves to keep the peace. Then anger arrives later, like a debt collector. So this lesson is about stopping that debt from forming in the first place. It's about learning that no is not cruelty. No is clarity. No is self-respect in a single syllable. And when we can say it cleanly, we don't need to carry the hidden rage of overgiving. A lot of us apologize too much because we think boundaries require guilt. We think refusal must be padded with a long explanation. I'm so sorry. I feel terrible. I wish I could. Maybe another time. I don't want you to be upset. And the intention is kindness. But the result is often confusion. Over-apologizing makes it sound like you're doing something wrong. It invites negotiation. It signals uncertainty. And then the other person pushes and pushes and pushes until your no becomes a fine and your fine becomes anger. Stoically, this is a failure of inner alignment, not moral failure, just misalignment. You knew what you needed, you didn't honor it, and then you paid for that choice with resentment. So the practice is to make no a complete sentence without turning it into aggression and without turning it into a guilty performance. I can't do that. That doesn't work for me. No, I'm not available. I'm not comfortable with that. These are not rude. They're clean. They're adult. And the fact that they might make someone uncomfortable doesn't make them wrong. A boundary that never creates discomfort is usually not a boundary. It's a suggestion. Now, there's a difference between being cold and being clear. We can be warm and still be firm. We can be respectful and still be final. But we don't need to over-apologize to prove we're a good person. Because here's the truth. Excessive apology is often a request for permission. It's us saying, "Please don't be mad at me for having a limit." And that mindset keeps us trapped. If we need someone's emotional approval to protect our time, energy, or peace, we'll keep betraying ourselves. This is why saying no without guilt is closely related to anger without guilt. They're part of the same skill, self-respect with composure, and it helps to remember something simple. You can be compassionate about someone's disappointment without taking responsibility for it. Someone might feel upset when you say no. That doesn't mean you did something wrong. Disappointment is a normal human emotion. They can handle it. And if they can't handle it, if they punish you, guilt you, or pressure you, then your no wasn't the problem. It was the test. It revealed the dynamic. This is also where our inner voice matters. The moment we prepare to say no, we often hear a familiar fear. If I say no, they'll think I don't care. They'll leave. They'll judge me. And the Stoic answer is not to become heartless. It's to become principled. We don't sacrifice our integrity to manage other people's perceptions. We don't trade self-respect for approval. We act according to what is right for us. And we accept that we cannot control how others interpret it. A practical technique that works well is to remove extra words. Apologize only if you've done something wrong, not if you're simply setting a limit. Instead of, "I'm so sorry, I can't," try, "I can't." If you want to add warmth without guilt. "I can't, but I appreciate you asking." Or, "I can't, and I hope it goes well." Warmth is fine, but the no stays clean. Because every time we say a clean no, we protect future peace. We prevent future resentment. We prevent future explosions. We stop anger from building in the basement. So if we want to handle anger without guilt, we have to begin earlier than anger. We have to say no at the moment we feel the boundary, not later, after we've agreed and suffered and silently kept score. A clean no is not selfish. It's honest. And honesty is the foundation of real relationships and real self-respect. 14. Distinguish healthy anger from aggression. This is where everything becomes clean. Because a lot of the guilt we feel around anger comes from one confusion. We treat anger and aggression like they're the same thing. We don't just fear anger. We fear what anger might turn us into. We fear becoming harsh, cruel, uncontrolled, humiliating. So we either suppress anger entirely, or we let it explode and then hate ourselves afterward. Both paths come from the same misunderstanding. Healthy anger is protective. Aggression is destructive. Healthy anger says, "A boundary was crossed." Aggression says, "I'm going to cross yours back." Healthy anger is about dignity. Aggression is about domination. Healthy anger aims for clarity and change. Aggression aims for pain, punishment, control, victory. And once we learn to see that difference clearly, we stop feeling guilty for feeling anger, because we realize anger can be honorable, anger can be clean, anger can be the voice of self-respect. Stoicism helps here because it teaches that virtue, character, is the goal, not emotional numbness, not being nice, not being admired. Virtue, and virtue inside anger, looks like restraint, fairness, courage, and truth. It looks like refusing to betray yourself without trying to destroy someone else. So how do we know which one we're in? We check our intention. If the goal is to set a boundary, restore respect, protect a value, or stop harmful behavior, we're in the territory of healthy anger. If the goal is to humiliate, to win, to make them feel small, to release our pain by creating pain, then we've crossed into aggression, and aggression is where guilt usually begins, because deep down we know we didn't just express ourselves, we attacked. Aggression often comes from fear, fear of being powerless, fear of being ignored, fear of being disrespected again. And when fear is driving, we try to force control. We raise our voice, use insults, bring up old wounds, threaten, exaggerate, go for the throat. It feels like power, but it's actually desperation. It's a nervous system trying to regain safety by becoming dangerous. Healthy anger doesn't need to become dangerous to be taken seriously. It becomes clear. It becomes grounded. It becomes firm without becoming cruel. Here's the simplest practical distinction. Healthy anger can be stated in one sentence that points to a behavior and a boundary. Aggression usually includes character attacks and emotional violence. Healthy anger says, "Don't speak to me that way." Aggression says, "You're pathetic. You always do this. What's wrong with you?" Healthy anger says, "That doesn't work for me. It needs to change." Aggression says, "I'll make you pay for this." And the Stoic discipline is learning to pause at the edge, right before the mind tries to escalate, right before we add the extra sentence that turns truth into cruelty. Because most guilt doesn't come from the first sentence. It comes from the second, third, and fourth, when we keep going past the point of clarity and start chasing emotional release. So in practice, we learn to keep the message short and specific. We name the behavior, we name the boundary, we name the consequence if needed, and then we stop. That stop is everything. It's the difference between self-respect and self-sabotage. And there's another layer here that's deeply stoic. Healthy anger is aligned with justice. Justice, in stoic terms, means fairness, not softness. It means we don't lie about what happened. We don't pretend we're fine. We don't allow wrongdoing to continue. But we also don't become unjust ourselves in the process. We don't let anger become an excuse to violate our own values. Because what's the point of defending dignity by behaving without dignity? This is why Stoicism doesn't ask you to be passive. It asks you to be principled. It says, defend what matters, but defend it with honor. Speak, but don't poison your speech. Hold your line, but don't lose yourself while holding it. So, if we're training anger as a skill, this becomes a daily question. Can I protect myself without attacking the person? Sometimes the answer is yes. Sometimes you need distance. Sometimes you need to end a conversation. Sometimes you need to leave. That's still not aggression. That's self-protection. Aggression is when you stay just to hurt. Healthy anger is when you act to protect. And once you master that difference, anger stops being something that makes you feel guilty. It becomes something that makes you feel grounded, because you didn't betray yourself, and you didn't betray your values either. 15. Treat anger as a boundary indicator. If we step back and look at anger with a calm, almost scientific curiosity, we notice something simple. Anger usually arrives when something important to us has been violated, ignored, dismissed, or taken for granted. It's not random. It's not bad energy. It's not proof that we're broken. It's often proof that we have a value, and that value just got stepped on. So instead of asking, how do I get rid of anger? The better stoic question becomes, what is this anger pointing to? Because anger is often the mind's loudest way of saying, a line exists here, and if a line exists here, we need to see it, define it, and communicate it. Most of our guilt comes from trying to treat anger like a moral failure, when it's actually a diagnostic tool. Think of it like the dashboard lights in a car. The light isn't the problem, it's the signal that something needs attention. If we cover the light with tape because we don't like how it makes us feel, we don't become safer, we become unaware. And unaware is where accidents happen. Anger is that dashboard light for the inner life. It tells us something here is out of alignment. Sometimes it's a boundary with another person. Sometimes it's a boundary with ourselves. Because we don't only get angry when people cross us, we also get angry when we cross ourselves, when we overcommit and abandon our limits, when we say yes out of fear, when we procrastinate and betray our own goals, when we stay silent and then resent the silence. In that sense, anger is not always about them. Sometimes it's about us realizing too late that we didn't protect our own standards. So the practice in this final lesson is to turn anger into inquiry, not accusation. The moment we feel anger, we ask two clean questions. First, what boundary was crossed? Second, what boundary do I need to make clear? Those questions shift us from raw emotion into self-leadership. And they also prevent the spiral that creates guilt. Because guilt often grows when anger stays vague. When we don't know what we're upset about, we either suppress it or explode. But when we identify the boundary, the anger becomes precise, and precision is calming. For example, if we're angry because someone interrupted us repeatedly, the boundary might be, I need to be allowed to finish. If we're angry because someone keeps joking at our expense, the boundary might be, I don't accept disrespect disguised as humor. If we're angry because a friend only calls when they need something, the boundary might be, I'm not available for one-sided relationships. If we're angry because we're always the one fixing everything, the boundary might be, I will not carry what isn't mine. Each one of these boundaries turns anger into a clear direction. Now, once we know the boundary, we face the real work, communicating it with composure. This is the part where many of us hesitate, because defining the boundary is one thing, but expressing it is another. Expression risks conflict. It risks disappointment. It risks us being misunderstood. But if anger is a boundary indicator, then staying silent is the equivalent of ignoring the indicator and driving anyway. You might keep moving, but you'll pay later. So the Stoic approach is to communicate the boundary calmly, early, and consistently, not with long speeches, not with emotional performance, with simple truth. That doesn't work for me. I'm not available for that. Please don't do that again. If that continues, I'll step away. You're not begging. You're not punishing. You're clarifying reality. And here's a quiet truth that can change everything. When we respect our own boundaries, anger becomes less frequent and less intense. Because anger often appears when our boundaries are unclear, either to us or to others. Clarity reduces anger. Not because we become numb, but because we become aligned. And alignment is peace. So if we want to get angry without feeling guilty, we stop treating anger like a shameful thing that needs to be hidden. We treat it like an honest messenger. We let it show us where we've been tolerating too much, where we've been avoiding a necessary truth, where we've been giving away our time, energy, dignity, or voice. Then we act calmly, deliberately, so the messenger doesn't have to return with a louder warning next time. And maybe that's the real shift. Anger isn't the enemy of peace. Unspoken boundaries are. If we take all of this and reduce it to a single Stoic principle, it's this. We can feel anger without surrendering our character. We can use anger without becoming aggressive. We can speak with firmness without becoming cruel. And we can stop feeling guilty, not by suppressing anger, but by training it, naming it early, separating feeling from action, dropping the shame, confronting cleanly, speaking with clarity, and treating every flare of anger as a sign that something deserves attention. So the next time anger rises in us, we don't need to panic. We don't need to judge ourselves. We simply pause and ask, what boundary is this protecting? Then we choose the most honorable response we can, one that preserves self-respect and minimizes regret. The next time we feel anger, even a small spark, we name it quietly. We breathe once and we ask, what needs to be protected here? And we let that answer guide our next sentence. Because the goal isn't to be nice, the goal is to be true, calm, clear, and unashamed of having boundaries. If this landed, hold on to one lesson and test it today in a real moment, not in theory, because that's where the skill becomes yours.